Hi, I'm Gordon Lanphier, and welcome to the Real Finds Podcast, the podcast where we have real conversations with key entrepreneurs, activists, and researchers shaping the real estate industry and, as a result, our world. On today's podcast, we'll be speaking with George Carrillo. George is a Marine and police veteran with a career in public health policy and founder of the Hispanic Construction Council. On the podcast, we have conversations about growing labor shortages in the construction industry and if there are public policy and entrepreneurial solutions. Further into the podcast, we discuss structural bonding and immigration reform and the growing trend towards resilient supply chains. If you're interested in real estate construction, today's episode is well worth the listen. George, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gordon.
So can you tell me a little bit about yourself and kind of what got you into construction and the world of building things?
Sure. Actually, it started several years ago. I was in state service. I was an executive managing social determinants of health. And during the pandemic, we saw that we needed a lot of money for infrastructure and development and residential housing and hospitals and urgent cares. And so I had a very large budget and a very large team in order to be able to manage that for the state of Oregon. And so that's where my really the construction mind and thinking of how to be very creative with federal and state dollars came into play. And then after the pandemic, you know, I decided to take a change in my career because some people from across the nation asked me, saying, hey, we really like your health perspective when it relates to construction and what it really means to be like a healthy community. Would you consider teaming up and opening up a nonprofit organization? And so for the first time in my career of 25 years working, I was going into the nonprofit world, leaving government and trying out this new adventure. And it's been a wonderful experience. And so this is where I use my lived experience and my knowledge of working in government and also working as a police officer prior to that, and figuring out how to help society become healthier and how to use construction and understanding that we need a really strong and stable workforce in order to keep, you know, the American dream alive here in the United States.
So what does it mean to have a healthy community? There's a lot of ways and a lot of metrics that people use. What are the kind of metrics and gauges that you use to determine like what a healthy community is and what we should be striving for?
Yeah, so when I looked at it, I would look at it from the key, you know, social determinants of health pillars. So I would look at economic security, I would look at food security, neighborhood and housing, safety within our community, and accessibility to healthcare. So I would look at those five major pillars and would work individual plans with different departments and being able to try to create a holistic approach and understanding that also too, what makes a society healthy is understanding how our politics and government comes into play and providing those safety nets when we're talking about social services within our community. So I'm a strong believer when it comes to that is that we have to understand what is the role of government? How does government participate in helping our communities? And when we really think about it, it's the most vulnerable people in our communities that we're trying to help. I know I've heard the rhetoric over the years of cash benefit and food stamps. You know, I will tell you that in my career, both being as a police officer and also an executive in state service, you don't see as much fraud or you don't see as much people, you know, gaining like wealth because they're on cash benefits or because they're receiving food stamps. The untold stories of the unseen faces are the ones that are children that only rely on one meal out of the day, which is usually provided by schools. You know, we don't see the mothers and women that are battered women from domestic violence. So we don't see our seniors who are becoming homeless that can't afford the last stage of their life, or, you know, the children that are being born into a health system without appropriate health care, regular checkups and things of that nature. So when we look at it, that's what society is striving for, right? Is to give not just equal opportunity, but equitable opportunity for people to achieve a good sustainable life, because it is a very short life that we really live.
So how does this all play into, industrial construction and the American supply chain? So we're going to have a lot of listeners that are listening this who are, you know, entrepreneurs or developers or in construction or occupiers who are in the industrial world. How does all this factor into their daily life and kind of the bottom line?
Yeah, you know, the thing is that we need small business. In order to become a healthy society, there's one key pillar that without it, everything crumbles. And we need shelter, we need infrastructure. Alongside that, you know, we need food. But for small businesses, when we think about food and shelter, those are two things that everybody needs. And on top of that, when we think about ourselves as consumers, everything that we see from, you know, from the tables to the cameras, to the roads, to bridges, the housing that we live in, it's all made and construction touches every single sector of the economy. And so everything that we create needs the help and support of that supply chain. And so the construction industry is this huge driver in the economy. And not just a driver in the economy, it's a driver in the well-being of individuals. Like I said, we need those basic needs, and construction provides those basic needs, just like running water, clean drinking water, running water, a place to use the restroom, a place that when we're done with our day, that we can go home and relax and be with our families. These are all very essential things that so many people thrive to. When they think of the American dream, they think of that home, they think of the white picket fence, they think of the communities that they come home to and walk their dogs and their kids in a safe neighborhood. So really, when we think about it, small business, construction, development, supply chain, it's all part of what we need in society in order to find real success and happiness.
So, you know, happiness is great and all, and I'm not somebody who wants the world to be unhappy. But most of our listeners are tuning in because they value the importance of economic productivity and how does kind of happiness and a healthy labor pool factor into a successful economy and kind of addressing kind of some of the shortages that we're seeing in issues like construction. I know. For some of our listeners, it depends what metric they're looking at, but we're talking somewhere between like 200 and 300,000 worker shortage generally in the construction industry right now. What are you seeing? And how does employee happiness and employee health and factor into kind of some of our shortages that we're seeing in the construction labor supply chain?
Yeah, so that's a great question. When we think about the construction industry, the numbers just continue to climb when we're talking about a workforce shortage. And so the situation isn't getting better. We also have an aging community within construction. When we think of like roofers, you know, roofers they're one of the most older communities when we think about the construction industry. Their average age is about 48 years old. And they're also more likely to get hurt. You know, they're up at high elevations. And so when we think about that, we really need to start investing in the youth, in exploring opportunities into construction. But there's also a real fact here is that the Hispanic community, especially in unskilled labor, you know, we account for more than 50%. You know, you go on any construction job site in the country, you're going to see Hispanics predominantly doing that hard labor. And right now with mass immigration that's happening and not really a clear direction from the administration of what is the end goal, I think every American can agree with on the president that we want safe communities, that we don't want criminals, undocumented criminals, illegal aliens, however you want to title them. We don't want them in our communities, and we support the president and deporting those individuals. But we also need a plan to understand that this problem that both parties have kicked down, you know, kicked this can down the road for years has provided us, we're between a rock and a hard place. We have to get these construction projects done, yet we have a deficit in the labor force And when you think about our calculations from our agency, is that we calculate between 700 and 900,000 undocumented immigrants in the construction industry. Now, the H-2 visa right now provides about 62,000 work visas. 40,000 of them are already accounted for renewal, so there's only an opportunity for 20,000 new visas to come in. There is something wrong there, right? Like the system is completely broken. So if we ask everybody to leave, well, how do we get them back? We're at a detriment right now. We're about 20% behind on construction projects right now. We're calculating over 500,000 open job openings currently right now. What happens if there's a construction boom? Where are we going to get that labor force from? And if you think about mass immigration, if the president was able to get his wish and deport everybody tomorrow, who would be able to do these jobs? How would we keep up? Right now, what we know is when we think about the happiness and the safety of not just the workers, but of businesses, is that, hey, everybody's tired. They're working long hours. There's a lot of overtime that's available. And these are hard, demanding jobs. So it's not like, oh yeah, let me put an extra 2 to 4 hours on a construction job and it's not taxing. It's very taxing. And they're working on the weekends and there's no time to take off. When you get injured, there's not a lot of people that are putting in workman's comp claims. And if they are, then it's only hurting the business owner too, because now it increases their premiums. So everybody's working hard, everybody's working as fast as they possibly can, but yet we don't have a real solution in order to create stability in the workforce. And that's what I'm looking for. That's what we're trying to advocate with Congress of saying, hey, we can do both. We can secure our borders, we can secure our communities, but we also need a real solution in order to make sure that this economy continues to scale at the pace that we need it to.
So what do you think some of those solutions are to the labor pains that we're going through right now? I mean, we have listeners on both the conservative and the liberal perspective on this podcast, and we get a lot of different voices from across the spectrum. So I don't mind pissing off my audience, whatever you want to tell me. What do you think is the solution? And I'm sure people will in the comments tell me, that it's wrong, or people will agree with you. But I'm just curious what you think the solution is.
I think the solution has to be there's not just one lever that we have to push in order to create a solution. We really do have to look at Americans don't want to do the work that immigrants do. So, how do we train our youth? How do we get them more involved? When we look at our education system, we've abandoned a lot of shop in early education. We don't really promote it. We went on this sprint that in order to be successful, you have to have a college degree. And now that we're seeing our aging workforce, we're rethinking that strategy and saying, no, we actually need more people, in the trades. But again, we have to understand what is our youth looking at? What do they view as success? Are these jobs livable wages? Do they believe that the benefit of the hard labor actually produces a higher wage than the course that they're currently taking? So we have to look at that. We really need to look at our education system and see what approaches, as we're looking at the next, generation to take over, how are we investing, federal and state tax dollars to educate our youth? I think when we think about the stability of our current workforce, well, the stability of our current workforce is, hey, we really do need to look at immigration. I don't believe that we need to give everybody amnesty. I think that there's a disillusion that everybody wants to be an American citizen. That's just not true. I just believe that we don't give people options right now in order to be able to work, go back home during the off season, or come here with a work visa that allows them to do a project and that, they want to be done. Or there are people that say, yes, I want to be here, but I don't necessarily want to be a citizen. Give me a work visa, give me an opportunity to be here legally, pay my taxes, own property. And if, hey, in the future, 10, 20 years down the road, I want to become a US citizen, allow me that opportunity. But I don't think for the mass undocumented people that they're asking for to be citizens. They're asking for a pathway in order to have legal status. That's what I'm pushing. You know, that's what I'm working with Congress on. Conversations with like Congresswoman Salazar and Congresswoman Escobar, both Republican and Democrat coming together. You know, back in 2023, they created the Dignity Act. We're asking them to put it back on the floor, get it to the speaker. Let's have a vote on it. It's a very comprehensive way of looking at how to fix immigration. And not everybody's in, right? It's not this blanket that everybody gets an opportunity to stay. No, there's parameters, there's rules and regulations within that policy that allows essential workers that have been here for at least 5 years an opportunity. And again, for people that haven't been here 5 years, there's not a pathway for them. If you've been in the country illegally and been deported, you don't have a pathway. This is really for the people that have, you know, gotten here, you know, that have been here for at least 5 years. And it talks about funding for border security. It provides a larger pool of workforce visas, not just from the construction aspect, but from ag and all these other industries. It really is a very comprehensive reform without creating amnesty. It's just creating a legal pathway for the people that are hard workers that pay taxes, that want to continue to stay here and contribute to our economy and to the growth of our industries. And so, again, I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can secure our borders. We can make our communities safe, but we can also pass comprehensive policies through Congress, get it passed through the president, and finally provide a level of stability. I think nobody right now in today's day and age, especially with tariffs, this whiplash effect, right? You know, just like with immigration, you're legal today, you're illegal tomorrow. Nobody likes that instability. The markets don't like that instability. Business owners don't like that stability. I think financial prosperity is stability in our policies and our trade agreements and our immigration policy, stability in our markets in order for us to really, truly be financially successful.
Yeah, I'd love to dig into that. I know that, you know, for our investors and developers, one of the biggest things that they're looking for is to try to put together a 3 to 5 year forecast in terms of policies and kind of economic climate conditions, because to get things off the ground, be it like an industrial building, for example, even if you're building spec and it's not super complex manufacturing, it's still going to take you like 18 months to really put a deal together. So right. In terms of that, one of the things that, you know, we're getting nonstop calls from our clients on is the tariffs and the trade wars. And look, that's rapidly moving. And I'm not going to go into, you know, the intricacies of trade with Vietnam or Cambodia or the EU, because all that is moving and changing right now. But how are you seeing just generally the trade war play out and some of the tariffs play out in the construction space that you're digging into every day?
You know, it's hard to say, I think, because things are moving so quickly with this administration. And as you're watching, you know, the news and you're seeing the press push the president, he stands very strong on his decisions. And then that can change hours later to something totally different. And what I don't appreciate about the administration is sometimes, you know, the smoking mirror effect. You know, if you say it enough, it's true. And it's really that it's not true. And so I think that with tariffs, it's sort of this wait and see. And I think that the market and businesses and consumers are going to react based off of what's happening that day. And so I think that hurts our supply chain, because with some of the rhetoric on how things are coming out, what it forces people to think, I'm in survival mode. You know, I can't afford the cost of living that I have today. I need to go out and run out and go buy more toilet paper, or I need to go buy this before prices go up. And so we're going to see people, we've already started to see people are starting to hoard material. And in some of the commentary that I've given, you know, to the press, I've commented on this behavior, and I've said, hey, it is a good thing to go purchase bulk goods and things like that, but within reason, understanding that, hey, it's still 4 years before there's going to be a new administration. It's going to be 4 years of back and forth with trade partners. Hopefully it doesn't last that long, but you can't stockpile enough goods for the next 4 years because of one, who has that kind of money? But also, two, we don't know how the market is going to respond. We don't know what prices are going to look like. And so we can't rob each other of opportunity for goods. Otherwise, we're going to see ourselves back in a COVID era of low inventory, raising prices because of inflation and availability. And we're not going through a health crisis. We're actually going through a crisis because of trade policies and back and forth instability in the market.
So I know a lot of our contractors and a lot of our industrial clients have been hoarding or at least storing in bulk a variety of essential goods. And at the very least, some of them that are international are nearshoring it in Mexico or Canada, where the perceived risk of instability or tariff threats is at least minimalized. I'm curious, are you seeing that across the board in the construction industry, or is it regionalized? What are you seeing?
So right now, what I'm seeing is I'm seeing people that, not all people, but there are people that are scared right now because their profit margins are thin. So when Trump imposed tariffs on, 150 countries, it was hitting so many sectors of the supply chain that subcontractors and general contractors, especially general contractors that function on a smaller profit margin. And when you think about the cost of goods in total going up 4 to 6%, it's like, wow, there goes all of my profitability. So there have been, people that are scared of what is happening. And then also too, like on the subcontractor side, I've seen people that have been scared, especially when it comes to HVAC units. The summer's coming up, summers have been getting really, really warm. And so the demand to service your HVAC is high. And so there is a scarcity, like, hey, I need to go out there. I need to go buy these parts. I need to get them cheaper now, before the prices go up. And now when we think about new development and new construction, when we look at like data centers, we know there's a lot of people that are investing in data centers. And we have an energy deficiency in this country in order to support those data centers. But the main critical tool to make a data center successful is it needs AC. It needs those
A
HVACs and those
lot, a lot.
a lot, right? And so it's got to be really cold. They're commercial, they're industrial, very expensive to replace, very expensive to repair. And so in that industry right now, just because of the, I believe because of the timing of the season, there is a scarcity mindset when it comes to those critical components.
So one of the other things that I'd love to talk about in terms of something that I think is a critical component of the construction industry, and you mentioned it earlier, but for somebody who doesn't spend a lot of time on construction sites, and I do, one of the things you notice very quickly is there are very few people that are like under the age of 30 on the construction site, regardless of, in our area, there's a large Polish and Ukrainian population that works on construction sites, or Hispanic, or if you just go down the list. There are very few people still under 30 that are on the construction site. And I think that's a huge cliff that we're starting to see in the construction industry. And it's definitely a worry. What are you seeing generally, and how can we get more younger people interested in the construction industry? Because if we don't, I think it could be very detrimental towards the general health of the American economy.
Yeah, well, when you look at our workforce, especially for our youth, working at McDonald's pays somewhere between $20 and $25 an hour. And when our youth looks at that and they say, hey, I can go make this amount of money right now working at McDonald's, or if I work at Starbucks, guess what? I can make that much money and I get benefits and I have college benefits by working at Starbucks. And I'm making a latte compared to hard construction,
Compared to roofing.
yeah, exactly. An hourly rate, you know, no health benefits, you know, there's no benefits of me going to college, you know. So I think what we have struggled with in the industry is educating the youth of like, hey, what is that career trajectory? You know, you see a lot of small businesses, just like car rental places, right? Every employee is an associate on a career path to become a manager and to own their own franchise, right? So they see that career trajectory. It's the same thing like at McDonald's. Well, if I'm starting off at $20, $25 an hour and all my job is to flip those fries, well, guess what? I want to be, you know, at the drive-thru making now $27 an hour. And I want to be, you know, a franchise owner, or, hey, this is just good enough for now because the benefits that Starbucks gives me for my college education is where I want to go. Right. And so it's an investment. They're investing in me. I'm investing in them. And in the construction industry, I think we really need to look at that. Hey, wages are really good. I mean, it's not that construction jobs don't pay well. Again, it's taxing though. And so our youth, they're built different, right? You know, that's a big thing on TikTok, right? I'm just built different. Yeah. And they are a very different generation from my generation. My generation, I remember my parents told me, hey, keep your head down, work hard, and, you know, just push through. And my parents worked in factories, you know, their entire life. That's not the career path that I wanted. They really pushed me towards a college education. And our generation really was about go to college, don't work in manufacturing. And now we have our youth. And as parents, what do we want? We want them to have a better life than what we do. But the education system and the industry and construction, we got to take a little bit of responsibility here too, as business owners. What career path and what education have we provided them? What benefits have we provided them? Why would they want to invest in a really hard life compared to working at Starbucks, right? So we have to take a little bit of ownership there too. But also too, in our education system, like I said previously, we really need to look at K through eight and our high school and even into college. How are we teaching those essential things that like my generation didn't get? I never had shop. I never had the opportunity for shop in elementary school and never had the opportunity for shop in high school. And I went to a public school from K through eight, and I went to a private school in high school, and actually was born and raised in Chicago. I actually went to St. Patrick's High School, you know, and I'm 46 years old and never once did I have it. So you put me on a construction site, I'm going to ask you, like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing, right? I know it from a higher level. I know it from, you know, the developer mind, from the general contractor, but that's the way our generation was pushed towards. So if we're going to make a shift in that, we really need to think again about our education system. What are we teaching our kids? You know, naturally when they're small, they love construction. You know, I remember I would put my kids in front of the TV and all they would do is sit there watching construction jobs on YouTube, right? And they just loved it. They were, or manufacturing lines, you know, of how they're spray painting and creating cars. They naturally have a tendency to be attracted to that industry. We fail to miss that connection and understanding that, hey, there is a career there. There is opportunity. And I think with technology advancements is also teaching the youth that, hey, construction isn't done the same way that it was done 20 years ago. And the path and the trajectory that we're going, there's actually going to be more of a need for more of an engineering mind, even in the heavy labor that we currently do now. And hey, guess what? It's pretty cool to drive this massive, forklift or any kind of heavy machinery. Like, hey, isn't that really cool? I know my kids would stand in line to go use it. I know myself as an adult, if you gave me the opportunity, I would probably go do it, right? But again, we have failed to connect that and keep that excitement alive for our youth to understand that there is a really good life and a rewarding life to look back and say, hey, I built that. I built that skyrise. I built that dam. The road we're living on right now, I built that. So we haven't been able to show that sense of pride and understanding that there is a real future in construction.
Yeah, that's very true. I know for me and my children, one of the number one things that we like to do is we drive or walk or however it is easiest to get to local construction sites, including sites that we're working on as either developers or investors or brokering. And there's nothing that some of my little ones love more than seeing an excavator or a bulldozer or even silly enough putting up drywall. But in terms of that, one of the things that we like to talk about is beyond that next generation getting into it is the current generation, how to inspire them to kind of move up in the industry. And I know my great grandfather started off, in development, and when he started off, there was in Chicagoland, the Germans and the Dutch, and that was the immigrant group that was coming in and doing development and construction then. Then it became the Italians and the Irish, and then it became and every immigrant group comes in, and they often start at the bottom and they move up, and then they become the general contractors. How do we inspire that next group of Hispanic immigrants to be the GCs that drive the next wave of skilled construction in the immigration that we're seeing now?
I think the inspiration, even beyond the Hispanic community, because the Hispanic community is the fastest growing minority group in the country. And, we're very large, of course, in construction. But when we think about it, we need help from all communities in order to fill
Of
this
course.
massive gap that we have, right? And so I think we need to understand how does our youth communicate? What inspires them right now? And I think like social media is a good thing. Making TikTok videos, YouTube shorts, things like that help make that connection for them of not just being able to say like, hey, this is how you can move up in the industry, but also like the cool things that you can do in the industry. Construction is so vast, right? It's like it's not just one thing. There's so many different industries within the industry of construction. So there's a lot of stories to be able to tell. There's a lot of success stories to be able to showcase also of people that have been very successful. And I think that we need to do a better job of doing that, but in the way that they receive that information. I also think that when it comes to our youth, our very, very, young youth, I'm talking about like from two to five before they even get to school, is looking at preschool programs. How do we invest some of those dollars that we're trying to do community outreach and saying, hey, what can we do to help, nurture that building opportunity, right? Whether it's toys and constructions and and dump trucks or volunteering some time and building something, with the youth, teaching them like how to pick up a hammer, what does it look like to be safe when you're doing something in construction? And then I think when we're looking at our high school students is how can we relate to them? I think about it just like as a military recruiter. So I'm a disabled veteran. I was in the Marines, and I remember my first time that I got influenced. And the influence happened when I was in high school. And I remember seeing that Marine in those dress blues, and I was just like so intrigued by it. And it's what sparked my interest. What are we doing as small business owners to go out to high schools, educate them? Again, taking them and having, career days, showing them that there are businesses out there that will invest in their future, that hey, come work for us. We'll put money in the bank so you can go to college. We'll give you scholarship opportunities. And if college is not the path for you, and this is the path for you, we're going to invest in you to get higher certifications. I really do think also like our unions need to do a better job of actively recruiting, especially in minority communities. Black and brown communities and unions are severely underrepresented. We know that they have a higher rates. They have better health benefits. there's a lot of good that they do, but they are lacking in being able to get people into their apprenticeship programs, pass their apprenticeship programs, and be an active member. And I think that with people that go through that process and fail, you know, we're losing them, you know, because they're not going to say, oh, I'm going to go work for an open shop now. They're done, right? They're ready to move on to, you know, to the next part of the next chapter in their career. So I think we need to be very mindful. Those graduation rates on unions, when I looked at them about a year ago, were severely low. I think it was about a 38% graduation rate for minorities. And that's just really unacceptable. They really need to look at how they're going to restructure themselves, provide that proper education and a pathway of success, not a pathway of turning people down. That's not a successful model. So I think when we take all of that, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, look, I 100% agree with you on that. And look, my grandfather was a Marine, and so Marines are near and dear to our heart. But if the unions have 1/10 of the Marines advertising, that would be incredibly badass, because nothing like those Marine commercials out there exists. In terms of that, we would like to go and get to some of the future and kind of how you see the construction industry going. I know we talked about a lot of change that needs to be done. We talk a lot about some of the issues that exist currently with the system, but I'd love to touch on the future of the construction industry just in general and kind of where mm-hmm. you see things going. I know you've mentioned all sorts of idyllic outcomes. But like, where do you see we're going at this current trajectory over maybe the next 10 years?
So what I'm hoping is that the trajectory that we're going forward in is that, I don't believe in overregulation. I do believe in, you know, deregulating. It shouldn't be so complicated for developers to go through the permitting process. Same thing, you know, for general contractors and subcontractors. When you put all that red tape, it is so costly. It creates massive delays. Pricing is off. We can't build what we need to build, and it takes forever in order to build. So what I like is in this trajectory that we're in right now, we're going to see a lot of deregulation. We also need to be careful though, because we have to have a healthy balance of regulation. We just can't, you know, cut everything, because then we don't have certain protections that, you know, protect businesses and protect consumers and protect workers. So there has to be a healthy balance. But I do believe we are in the path of deregulation, which means we're going to be working on projects faster. We're going to see profit margins starting to increase. What I'm hoping to see and what I want to hear from the president is, you know, let's start talking about opportunity zones. When he did that in that first administration, it really helped out developers. It really helped out communities. We started to build more. We started seeing better development, more multifamily housing. You know, we really need to boost our efforts in housing. 4.5 million homes deficient right now. It's going to take us a long time to be able to catch up. So what's great about that is that there's tons of opportunity, a lot of opportunity out there in residential housing. The great thing about residential housing is that once you start building that, you have to create the infrastructure in order to support that. So we need more roads and bridges and water supply and sewage systems, and we need more schools to be built, and we need more shopping centers. Like, it helps everything blossom. So I see the future as being very bright in construction, because if we tackle that problem, it is only going to be, you know, this domino effect of more opportunity for profitability. The problem I see, the challenge that I see, is that as government dollars are being invested into development of this, is that as a government and as an industry, we really need to start thinking about bonding capacity. You know, we have so much insurance on these projects. If I were to go do a multifamily housing on the private side, I don't need bonding capacity, right? Everybody can participate. Government jobs, you need that bonding capacity. And right now we have a serious issue with even the big general contractors in the United States with bonding capacity. They're maxed out, right? And so something's got to give. We, again, I don't, there's so much opportunity out there. No one should be worried about the lack of opportunity. Right now, we need smart deregulation, and we need smart opportunities to work with government and really rethinking their bonding capacity structure that really is another hindrance on our growth.
Can you go into that a little bit further with bonding capacity? Because I'm not sure all of our audience fully understands kind of how that works typically. I know all the developers that are listening do, but some of the investors and the limited partners might not. So can you explain that a little bit more?
So bonding capacity is just another form of saying insurance, right? And so here there's another surety on a government project that the project is going to be completed. And in order to work on a government project, you need to have enough liquid assets in order to say, yes, I can cover the cost of this project. And so the problem with that is that, hey, when we think about government funding, those are big dollars, right? So if you're going after a contract or a grant through the government, and it's $10 million to build a multifamily development, that $10 million, you have to be able to have that bonding security. You have to have the liquidity in your portfolio to say, yes, I can cover this, and that you have an insurance agency that's willing to give you that bond, so that way you can work on that project. And so it's a hindrance, because if that insurance company says, hey, you have a capacity of $10 million, great, I can work on that one government project, I can't take on any more government projects because my bonding capacity is maxed. And in many situations, the government won't release that bond until the project is completely done. So you don't have the opportunity to work on two or three, four or five projects because you're limited on your bonding capacity. And so it really is crippling. It's a glass ceiling for small business general contractors to really break that ceiling. And then for the larger general contractors, yes, they have this massive bonding capacity, but again, they have to be able to show that liquidity. They have to be able to increase that capacity to take on more jobs. Otherwise, they have to finish the projects that they have in their portfolio before they can continue to scale. So when we look at that, our bonding capacity really hurts general contractors, subcontractors, and really hurts us from breaking these glass ceilings at every level of being a business owner in construction, if you want to work with the government.
So I couldn't agree more on that. And look, I'm more libertarian on a lot of things, so that's not a surprise. But in terms of one of the things that we always like to do on a Final Four is, and we've already talked about the future. I'd love to see if we could talk briefly about kind of, if somebody does want to get into the construction industry, how they would start off the process. Because I think there are a lot of people listening that to this podcast that are maybe not necessarily in the construction industry, but they know somebody who might want to get into the construction industry. What would be your advice to those people?
So my advice to those people would be, we probably all know somebody in construction, one of our friends or neighbors, reach out, ask them questions, be curious, understand that you can also work with your local trade organizations. There's a lot of local trade organizations that support the construction industry, like NAMAC, the National Association of Minority Contractors is one big for minorities. AGC is another national organization. Our organization, the Hispanic Construction Council, where they're also, we function just in a very different manner than chapter organizations. We're not a chapter organization. We really work on high level critical thinking, policy changes, influence of making those policy changes. That's what our council really focuses on. Reach out to the local trade unions there locally. Unfortunately, in this environment, if you're curious about construction, you have to put effort into reaching out, because again, we don't market and advertise the way we normally, other industries do in order to recruit more people. But I would say, put in that effort. Just don't go to one source. Look at multiple sources to get a better education of of what the construction industry looks like and where do you think you might fit, and understanding that it is vast. It's not one thing. It's not just what you see when you're driving down the road. There's so many things that we don't see that you just really truly need to educate yourself. And also too, for the people that are currently in college, like you have an advantage. You have career counselors that can provide you that guidance. For high school students, the same thing. Go to your career counselor and start having those conversations to give you the right education of what are the possibilities within the construction industry.
Yeah, great advice on that. One of the ways that we like to have additional advice, though, is through books and literature or nonfiction. I'm a big reader, even if it's just periodicals. So I'm just curious, is there a book that you would recommend to anyone who's interested in, construction or anything related to the construction industry, or just a book in general that you might want to share with our audience?
So when it comes to construction, I have found that I've read a lot of books within the construction industry, and I will tell you that they're really dry reads. And
Surprise,
so,
surprise, surprise,
surprise,
surprise.
surprise, right? And so, what I have found, what I'm actually more attracted to are picture books.
All right,
I
yeah.
really like picture books because of the fact that you're able to see projects from dirt to framing to completion. You see all these different facets. And so what I recommend to people, especially when they come to me and they ask me about the construction industry, is I'd say, hey, I want you to go to Barnes and Nobles. I want you to pick up a picture book in construction, even from the children's side of things. And I want you to look at what is being built and the different things that are being built. Because I think that people like associate construction with housing. And yes, that's one piece of it, but there's so many other things to it. And so when they start seeing those picture books, people will come back to me and they'll be like, man, George, that was great advice because it was really cool to see how people actually work on sky rises. Like, I never knew how it really happened. Like, you see the cranes, but you never really look to see what's happening. And I actually got to see those and I started doing some research on TikTok and, on YouTube and started watching videos on it. So it's like it sparks their interest because. Again, like I said, nothing against, the black and white text, but the thing is, it's just that it's not super exciting. And so I don't want to, recommend a book to somebody that's going to totally detract them from actually wanting to look at construction. It's like, man, if I can't even read this, I don't even want to know anything about it. But it seems like picture books, honestly, has been the best course of action. I've gotten a lot of people to respond to picture books.
Like, I'm not going to hate on that. I'm a lawyer in a previous life, and my favorite book back there is probably some of the architectural books that we have with beautiful paintings and drawings. And I'm not going to hate on picture books whatsoever. But there is one thing I will hate on, and that is if we don't get a good answer out of you for this last question, because it's the whole podcast point. And that's, the Real Finds podcast is all about finding individuals that are in the arena or in a space that heavily caters to the world of real estate or construction or real estate related business. And I'm curious, who should be the next voice that we have on?
So one of my favorite in the industry is Louis Puig, and he's actually in Chicago. Actually,
Okay, awesome.
all construction. He's just a wonderful individual, great family. I've been to their offices, and it's beautiful to see all of the projects over so many years of the things that they've created in construction, and from being just a small general contractor way back in the day to being the largest Hispanic, general contractor, the largest masonry in the industry for the city of Chicago. So it's wonderful to see success for a company, but also success for a very, good, noble family in the city of Chicago.
Like we'd love to have him on, and we're going to reach out to you to try to make that connection. And the last thing, and this is also a very important question, is if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, to get in contact with me, please visit our website. It's www.hispanicconstructioncouncil.com. There you can fill out a form. We'll start sending you communications with everything that we're doing. We actually have our annual report that's coming out here in about 2 weeks. So a lot of great information that we're going to be passing on, not just Hispanics in construction, but the as the industry as a whole and our projections for the future.
George, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast, and we have to have you on in the future.
Thank you so much, Gordon. Had a lot of fun today. Thanks.
Thanks again to George. We appreciate his insights. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. Your comments, interactions, and subscriptions truly matter and help us provide quality guests. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lamphere with the Real Finds Podcast. Thank you for listening.